All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Liberty Lens. I am your host, Big John, accompanied, as always, by my friend and co-host, Mr. Mike Termott, former LP VP nominee in 2024. It's a tongue twister, but I'll get it right eventually on the first try, Mike. How you doing today?
Doing good. It's great to be with you and finally covering the issues that I know you've been wanting to talk about for a week. And since you and I talked about the possibility that we ought to be talking about some of these weird immigration cases, others have cropped up. So good for you for understanding where this was going.
Well, it is one of those things that I'm always sensitive to, Mike, as we discussed in earlier shows, both of us being sons of immigrants, you know, and at some point in our American lineage. So it is an issue that is dear to me and to you, I think. Okay, let's get right to it. Yeah, let's get right to it. So the first one that drew all the attention was the deportation of alleged Venezuelan criminals, illegal immigrant criminals, alleged, because they were never adjudicated. And they were deported both back to Venezuela and to a way station, a third-party way station in El Salvador, a prison in El Salvador. So, Mike, what could possibly go wrong with just rounding up people, putting them on a plane, and sending at least some of them to a third-party country's
prison?
Well,
it seems like every piece of it could be problematic. And I should probably hasten to add that I am speaking as someone who agreed with the Trump administration that we needed to get some control over the border. I wasn't, advocating that we have a completely uncontrolled open border. And that necessarily implies that you're going to have some people in the United States who are illegal, some that are illegal, and you're going to have to decide what to do about that situation. The administration suggested that there was going to be some prioritization regarding deporting illegal aliens, and I thought that was a very important concept. So when the administration says, you know, we've rounded up 200 criminals and we're going to deport them, I think a lot of us figured, well, you know, you've committed a violent felony, you're here illegally. Why would we want to bend over backwards to develop some path to legalized status or, you know, something creative when these are people that, you know, you really don't want to have part of your society. You don't owe them anything. Just get rid of them. But to your point, all kinds of things can go wrong. starting with the law under which they are being deported without due process is something that I think everyone had understood to be something that was to be invoked during wartime. Apparently, I don't have the language right in front of me, but the language says something like, we're at war or under an invasion. Those are potentially two very different things. Obviously, Congress hasn't declared a war. And I think that we can all argue round or square whether a couple of hundred violent gang members coming to the United States to commit crimes is an invasion. I'd actually be willing, this may sound a little weird as a libertarian, I might be willing to cut the Trump administration a little bit of slack here because, it would be hard to argue effectively, I think, that if a nation sent sort of in the movie, The Mouse That Roared, a couple of dozen idiots and rowboats, you know, that constituted an invasion, whereas hundreds of hardened gang criminals coming over did not, right? And so I think a lot of us would be willing to cut the administration some slack, but I think that there has to be, the big phrase going around Washington these days is show your work, right?
Right.
There has to be something that backs that up. You know, here's what we consider an invasion. And I think that that necessarily implies that you've got to articulate where the bar is. You know, a certain number of people or a certain activity or capability or coordination, you know, something. You've got to, you can't just say, to exaggerate to make my point, you need to set the bar higher than one bad guy coming over and committing a crime as an invasion, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And what I wanted to ask you, Mike, is because this is where I think a lot of us either are, as libertarians, are overreacting in some people's view or in other people's view, not screaming loud enough, right? So depending on which side of the political aisle. So, for example, I have no problem to say, like, hey, we rounded up these 200 illegals and we held them under suspicion of felonies. And of those 200, 198 of them were adjudicated to have actually committed these felonies. So we're shipping them out. No mercy for them. I think most Americans, as you indicated, would have been like, hey, we got no problem with that. As a matter of fact, go round up the ones that are citizens and do the same thing if they're involved in that activity. No problems there. I think, to your point, to show your work, much like in grade school when you do your math, becomes very important because, like, these 200, we've already seen cases where green card holders and naturalized citizens and American-born citizens have been swept up, sent to places like Gitmo, and then it's like, oops, sorry, are bad, right? And there's no compensation for it. There's nobody held accountable. Do you feel someone like me is overreacting by saying, hey, these are almost like Gestapo-like tactics that are just rounding up people and shipping them off to prisons in El Salvador?
I don't think that that's necessarily an overreaction. Obviously, there are different cases that have a different feel to it. But I think that as, not just as libertarians, by the way, but as American citizens, I think that we need to hold our government to as high a standard as possible because we are dealing with people's lives, right? And, you know, my second concern is not just the invocation of this particular law, but the due process, whatever law you are using as the authority under which to deport people or to detain or arrest people generally, there, in my view, must be due process, which is not articulated in this law. The law doesn't say do away with due process, which means you've got to fall back on the Constitution, and we believe that we understand what due process isn't and is to a certain extent, and these folks haven't been given it. And the reason that it's important is not just because in general we're dealing with humans and therefore they deserve due process, but because when you round up, to your point, hundreds of people, there's bound to be mistakes, right? No, and I'm not suggesting, you're bad because you made a mistake. I get that. I was in law enforcement for 11 and a half years myself. I understand that humans make mistakes in law enforcement without meaning to. The issue is that any number of these people are believed to be not members of gangs. The administration, from what I've heard, the administration is not even alleging that they are all gang members, nor is the administration even alleging that they have all committed a crime. And so the only reason that they're being deported is because they've been with gang members. They're all from Venezuela at a time when we believe this group of Venezuelans has invaded. And I believe, in my own view, this needs to be, if not adjudicated, due processed, so that we can all gain a level of comfort regarding where is that bar? How high or how low a bar are we setting? Which brings us to what I believe is a third important issue, which you and I have talked about very briefly already, which is this: what does deport mean? You know, what is the deportation? When you deport someone, it just means you're throwing them out of the country. You know, does that mean you walk them to the Mexican border or the Canadian border and say, keep walking and don't come back? Right. Are you allowed to drop them in the Atlantic Ocean? You know, these folks are not being sent to their homeland. They're being sent to El Salvador. And importantly, they're not being set free there, nor are we leaving it up to the El Salvadoran government to decide what to do with them. We have decided that they are to be imprisoned, and we're paying the El Salvadoran government a fee for doing so. Well, this brings up a host of issues.
Well, that's now, super troubling, right? Super troubling.
Very troubling. Now you have done with these people what should require a criminal adjudication, not a, you know, probable cause hearing or even, you know, minimal due process. We're talking about imprisoning people and imprisoning them. Let me be clear. Under the authority of the federal government of the United States, not the El Salvadoran government. The El Salvadoran courts are not involved whatsoever.
Right, right, right.
They're not adjudicated there. They're not processed there. They're just housed and imprisoned there. In other words, they're being imprisoned under the authority of the federal government of the United States without due process, much less a criminal adjudication. I find that very troubling. And I think that there's an important distinction that we as Americans, again, not just as libertarians, but we as Americans need to make regarding whose authority is it. The Constitution, how do I say this, does not merely outline your rights. The Constitution delimits the powers of the government. That's its point. In other words, the Constitution isn't there to define who gets what rights, right? If you're a citizen, you get this, and if you know you're not a citizen, you're just visiting, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what it's all about. What it is limiting the power of the government to treat anybody in a certain way. This is an important point. If the Constitution doesn't give the government the authority to do something to anybody, that doesn't mean that the government gets to decide, well, you're not a citizen, and so we get to do X, Y, and Z. That's not how this works. So.
To your point, Mike, and I can't agree with you enough. The issue of, like, oh, we're going to play these games, right? If we put them on a plane and the plane is in international airspace, then we don't have to listen to court orders to stay court orders. We could just drop them off anywhere. And by the way, FYI, we paid El Salvador, so they're making a profit, right? I don't know how this is any different than supporting Ukraine, right? You send them money to house these people, and now you wash your hands. Just like Pontius Pilate, you wash your hands of the results. Like if those people get raped or murdered or whatever in that El Salvadorian prison, we don't care. We just ship them off to a third
party. But legally speaking, they are your contractor. So you must bear some responsibility. And that brings up the fourth point that you just put your finger on, which is sending people out of the United States despite a court order. There seems to be some argument about when the plane was in the air, when the oral order was issued, when the written order was issued, what's in the written, blah, blah, blah. A couple of things I think need to be said here. The White House press secretary implied that the reason the government felt good about this, about what it had done, was because they weren't going to view the oral order from the bench to be binding, whereas the written order, yes. This is a bad look. First of all, just helpful memo to a friendly administration. Don't let your press secretary opine on detailed matters of law. Just don't be doing that.
Yeah.
Because that should show up in court, right? She is a representative of the government, of the administration. And she basically said, not well cloaked, that the government was not going to take very seriously something that was merely in an oral order. Well, that's not how this works.
Right.
If the judge loses her or his pen and typewriter and computer, that doesn't change anything.
Right.
When the judge says, you know, you've been sentenced to a year in jail, take him away, people don't stand there in the court and wait for him to write it down, right?
Right.
That's just the way it is. There is no such thing as oral versus written. And that's a problem. Now there are those who say, well, maybe the plane was off the ground. Maybe it was in international waters already, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Notwithstanding the press secretary having thrown the government under the bus, let's suppose that she made a mistake and the plane was already in international waters, right? The court's ruling is not a matter of geography. It's a matter of authority. If the court issues a ruling regarding what it is the government is or is not allowed to do in a war in Vietnam, it still counts. You don't get to say, well, you know, you can't take away our war authority. We're fighting this in Vietnam. No, that's not how this works, right? You're in Washington, D.C. calling the shots, and this is a federal court telling you to turn the plane around. You turn the plane around, or you're in defiance of a court order. It's that simple. It's going to be made to sound much more complex, more complex, but it's not, right?
Yeah, and Mike, I wanted to touch on this because given Trump's first administration, given the way things are going now, and I'm trying to use the right words to avoid sounding too TDS-y, but there has been a penchant on the, you know, there has been an inclination on part of Trump to test legal waters, you know, like all these novel theories. Pence can overturn the election. You know, here's like all these new electors. By the way, we don't have to pay attention to verbal court orders, only written ones. The plane was right. These are all, and someone will say, perhaps correctly, show me where in the Constitution that this is not the case, right? So they are very fond of throwing out, in my opinion, these ridiculous points, but then you have to adjudicate them. They have to go to the Supreme Court. They have to run its way through the – and in the meantime, he's running around roughshod. Do you think that this is also part of what we talked about, the desensitization of the American public to this sort of nonsense, right? So we're calling things invasions. We're calling – like the Alien Enemies Act, we've said it before. It's either a war declaration by Congress or declaring a hostile nation. Now, if you declare Venezuela a hostile nation, that also means that every legal Venezuelan immigrant to this country, as a matter of fact,
is at risk.
Is at risk. They don't need a reason to throw
you out. A la Japan in the 40s.
Exactly, just like the Japanese internment. So, what do you do? You feel that? And look, whatever the press secretary's name is, was it Pettit? Whatever her name is.
Yep.
She's acting like she's Junior Clarence Darrow up at that thing. Like every day, she's got a novel theory. She's shooting. She must love Trump's style because she's, you know, she's a mocking reporter. She's taking them down. She has a very
dismissive.
Dismissive and extroverted style where she's laying it all out there. You mentioned like she's a representative of the government. A lot of her statements may end up in court. Do you see her toning it down? Is it just going to be turned up to 11 until, you know? And how long do you ignore court orders, Mike? What happens if the Trump administration just says, we're not going to listen to anybody?
I think that they will. I don't want to presuppose bad behavior. I'm going to continue to take the administration at face value.
Okay.
I'm going to assume that they want to comply with the Constitution. More important administration officials have said so and have said that, you know, maybe there's a misunderstanding. We're standing down until we get this cleared up with the court. And so I think there's reason to believe that most of the administration, notwithstanding the press secretary, most of the administration is operating in good faith.
Okay.
And so I'm going to remain guardedly optimistic on that. And we'll see. I think that where my own head is that I would like to be generally supportive of the administration's good faith efforts. And I wish they would do a better job of being careful with the court. By the way, being careful with the legislative branch in the context of DOGE and other things that we've talked about.
Right.
But at least as importantly, articulating what it is the process by which they're going through these things, but also B, where are the limiting principles? How low do we set the bar? What do we believe is required? Under what circumstances? These things are critically important, and you're gonna have to come up with them for the court anyway.
Right.
Do yourself a favor and adjust your clock so you come up with these arguments 2 weeks earlier than you wind up in court having to scramble to backfill. Right. Because when you're backfilling, now you've got to come up with arguments that fit a particular case. Whereas if you come up with the arguments in advance, even if one case or another goes wrong, you can say, well, we've got these principles, we just screwed up in this particular instance. It's really hard to say that retrospectively when it looks like, you know, you're coming up with an argument to fit the case.
Right, when you were acting in bad faith. Okay.
So I think that there's a political aspect. Now, you asked an important question. I know there's another case that we want to talk about.
Yeah, go ahead.
You asked something that I think is really interesting about, you know, what our perception should be of the administration.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that the administration is not helping itself. I think that the administration is hurting its own cause, is how I would say it. If you really believe in a tough immigration policy, admittedly, there's a difference between how you and I see it and how the Trump administration sees it. No question about that, right?
Yeah.
I'll give you that. But never mind all that, right? Never mind all that. We're not even talking about immigration policy. We're just talking about the legal authority. I think you're undermining your own interest in all of this by not handling it much, much more carefully. That would be my message to the administration.
Yeah, and they still remain popular among their base. The base is very happy with what Trump is doing and the Trump administration and Homan and Doge and all that. So they still
you had asked, you know, is the American public paying less attention or more attention based on certain things? It seems to me that some of this is driven by the fact that the American public is actually paying more attention to some of these cases than used to be. For example, remember that Barack Obama used to be the king of deportations.
Yes.
And we gave him a pass for the most part. You know, people weren't upset. I'm sure there were mistakes made, right? I mean, having been a cop for 11 and a half years, I can tell you, you don't deport 10,000 people with making a few mistakes.
Right, right.
But nobody seemed up in arms. And I think a piece of that was his ability to point to the correct statute, the due process, where we're clearing the bar, where we're not. But I also think that there's a piece that we just weren't paying that much attention.
Right, and there's a certain bit of rhetoric, right? The Obama rhetoric was different in tone than the Trump rhetoric, whether you agree with it or not.
That's right.
It is what it is, right?
And this administration invites contentious rhetoric from both sides. It offers its own contentious rhetoric and, you know, gets all this pushback, a lot of which is crazy. I'm not trying to suggest that the Republican Party is any crazier than the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party's pushback is
out
of their minds.
Right. But the point is, a lot of Trump's appeal is that willingness to be contentious with the opposition. So I give him credit for that. He knows what his people love, and he's giving it to them. If nothing else, you can't take it away. He's a populist. Whatever resonates with the most number of people at any given time is his principles. So
I also don't have a problem with pushing the courts a little bit. You know, you were making the point that he likes to test the limits. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not a big fan of testing it after the fact, right? I don't like putting 200 people in an airplane and then saying, okay, sue me.
Yeah, because now you've got human guinea pigs to test your
legal theory. Well, that's exactly right. I like better the idea that this is what we're going to do. You know, if anyone has a problem, say so now, because, you know, next Saturday at 4 is when we're going to execute on this, which is how I would have done it. But as a matter of sort of principle, I don't have a problem with testing the boundaries. Indeed, I'm the one who spent the last 2 years saying, I wish, you know, we spend a lot of time as libertarians saying we want to take power away from the federal government. I would love a more muscular federal government if it would stand up for our rights. If that's what it were spending its musculature doing,
right?
But in all too many cases, that's not what the federal government does,
It's just
we've killed that case.
No, because I think it's very important, especially the court issue, right? Because in addition to what we just described about immigration policy, treating people like human beings with respect and all that. You also have this thing that the Trump administration has signaled, and I mean, on our free-for-all, I'll plug that, our 50th episode last week where both you and Larry Sharp were on, we said, is there a movement to start impeaching judges? Is this a thing with the Trump administration? And you kind of dismissed it, and you said, John, I'm not worried about one or two people talking about it. You know, it's just – but we're seeing it more and more congressmen, Republican congressmen and women are starting to file articles of impeachment against specific judges, not – for bribery or anything, but for rulings. Sort of tied into this is another case that we just read about this morning. Mike, you alerted me via text this morning, so I jumped on it. The case of Dr. Rasha Alawaya. I hope I'm pronouncing the last
name correctly. Alawaya,
thank you. She's a Lebanese origin green card holder. She's a permanent resident of the U.S.
I don't think she has a green card. She has an HB1.
Oh, she has an HB1. Okay, I stand corrected.
Which is a long term. I mean, she bumped up from the student visa to the long term for employment purposes, and her employer was her sponsor.
Okay. Fair enough. Yes, you're right. My mistake. I apologize. Not a green card holder. Valid H1B. And let's just also add, she is a apparently talented kidney transplant specialist, and she's got hundreds of patients in the U.S., in Rhode Island, I think, and she's an assistant professor at Brown University.
Right, she's HB1 for cause.
Yeah.
You know, she's not one of these, you know, do we really need these people in the United States or not? She's a kidney transplant surgeon.
Which, by the way, she has hundreds of people have her to thank for their lives right now. And she's got hundreds of patients that she's taking care of on American patients. Let's emphasize this for the patriots out there. She went back home for, I think, a visit. On her way returning back to the U.S., the U.S. Customs and Border Protection decided to nab her and do a little investigation.
Yep.
And again, I don't know how much of this is legal or not, Mike. I leave it to you. But apparently on her phone, they found deleted pictures and video of her attending a public funeral for some, was it Hamas or Hezbollah? Some terrorist leaders and some video of Iran's Khomeini. So,
yes.
Now, again, there was no evidence of her having engaged in any sort of illegal activity. There is no known, as far as the government is alleging, support, concrete support or participation in terrorist activities. As a matter of fact, there was a court order saying, let's put an injunction on booting her out of the country and revoking her visa. Let's find out what's going on. CPB decided to ignore the order and have denied her entry into the country. So, Mike, tell me about this horribly dangerous person.
I think, once again, there are four different legal issues at play. And by the way, we have to stop characterizing her as sympathetic. As true as that probably is, you and I want to pretend that that's completely irrelevant, right? She could be the worst hardened criminal in America. But someone needs to decide that. The first issue that came to my mind was one of surveillance. Because the first stories that came out were that she had attended the funeral of a Hezbollah representative, and that that was somehow important. And that seems to be murky now at this point. People, I don't know if they're backing away from that, or, you know, maybe that was or wasn't true. But something triggered her being detained, right?
The airport.
Questioned and searched when she came back through, I guess it was Logan, came back through Boston's airport coming home. Well, coming home, coming back to work, coming back to her American home from her Lebanese home. Something triggered that detention. And so the first question I would have is, what was that? You know, what was the nature of the surveillance, the observation, the data collection? What triggered this? Now, if you're traveling internationally, you pretty much give up all rights for everything to be searched. The administration is saying that that also pertains to telephones. I was not aware of that. I'm willing to take their word for it at the moment. That comes as news to me, electronic devices, but I'll take their word for it. And so that they were able to search her phone. Maybe she gave permission, but the administration is suggesting that, you know, they had the right to take her phone and look through it. And they found these images that you point out, right? And so the next issue that comes to my mind is the so what, right? Now, I recognize if I travel internationally later on this year and I've got pictures of you on my phone, that's probably going to cause me a problem. And I get that. Right. But dead religious figures who have played a role in terrorism, that does not a terrorist make.
And also, let's make the distinction. This wasn't a private funeral that she went to, allegedly.
Right.
It was a public funeral.
Where all kinds of people were there.
Right. And her claim is, I was just being a devout Muslim by attending this funeral.
No one is alleging that she has given money or any other form of material support to a terrorist or a terrorist organization. No one is even alleging that. This is a matter of association, what would be protected by the First Amendment, but for the fact that the administration believes it can treat citizens and non-citizens differently. And that goes back to my earlier point that the Constitution limits the powers of the federal government. It does not spell out what the rights are of humans. But for the administration, it's the other way around. It's saying you can't go here and you can't go there because you are the government. And so I think that we all should have a little bit of pause here to suggest that we're going to treat someone in a certain fashion because of views that they have expressed, either by having images on their phone, attending a funeral, even saying nice things. But you know, to carry that to its logical extent, it seems to me you should be able to burn an American flag and wave some dopey flag around representing a, you know, evil terrorist organization without being deported. But that's, you know, my view.
Right.
And part of the reason why I have that view is because I think that we need a bright line distinction between that and material support, because material support is something that I think absolutely needs to be prioritized deportation. So anyway, this doctor, she gets herself detained for 36 hours at the airport. Not a small thing, right? At the airport. This is not at a motel. You know, this is at the airport. I don't know if you've ever been detained at an airport traveling internationally, as I have been. It's a unpleasant experience.
Yeah.
And for no good reason in my case, it was because of the physical appearance of my son, which is a bit of a weird thing. And, you know, detained for 6 hours, I don't want to blow it out of proportion. It wasn't that big a deal. No one was physically abusive to us. It was just you know, a lot of stupid, nasty words in a foreign accent, trying to intimidate us, but we didn't have anything to give up or hide, even if we wanted to. I mean, we're America. I don't know what else to say, you know. I'm a libertarian. That does make me a crazy ass son of a bitch, but I don't think that's
put you on an FBI watch list if you're a libertarian.
Yeah, my government's probably more pissy with me than yours should be.
Right.
So, you know, that's the next issue is what is it that the government thought was so, in effect, dangerous about this individual? And then the fourth legal issue is what you put your finger on. This is yet another case of, oh, the plane took off already. And the judge is now asking for a detailed review, just like in the El Salvadoran shipment of the Venezuelans. The judge is asking for more detailed information regarding, you know, what did you know and when did you know it and when did you let that plane take off? In this case, it really does appear as though her attorney knew of the court order, but was unable to communicate it to the Border Protection people.
Right.
And it could well be that they didn't know. Now, one might ask, why? Right. There's an incompetent link somewhere in that chain.
Right.
But I don't know that we can lay this at the feet of Border Protection that, you know, someone in that courtroom didn't do a very good job of communicating it, maybe by mistake, maybe on purpose. I don't know. Right. I don't want to presume, but some ball got dropped. But it was just a matter of minutes to play. So it could have been a relatively minor mistake. I mean, an effort would have had to have been made to communicate to the right people in the right airport at the right place in time. And for whatever reason, that just wasn't successful. But as you might imagine, a lot of people are upset about what happened in that 20-minute period.
And I agree, Mike. And listen, if she was suspected of something, look, I have no problem. I have a problem, but I have less of a problem. Someone said, look, we had this information. She's in another country, so the CIA is in play, tracking her and figuring out what she's doing. She went to a suspicious funeral. Great. I would imagine the same thing happened here for RICO cases, that if somebody, say, went to Gotti's funeral in Brooklyn or in Queens, wherever he had his funeral, that, yeah, the FBI might take your license plate number down. They might try to figure out if you have any real connections. Or maybe it turns out you were like a distant cousin of the guy and you wanted to attend his funeral, right? So, but to your point, we don't know any of that. We just know that she allegedly attended this funeral, and you're saying even that's kind of like right now. They obviously got into her phone because they said they found deleted photos and videos.
Deleted images, that's right.
Which means they, and you know, most of us understand that isn't something you just pop up, right? Like they had to go find it. So they knew what they were looking for, in my opinion.
And knew how.
And knew how, right.
They had someone at the airport able to do that.
Assuming she didn't give them permission, to your earlier point. Because just to get into an iPhone that's locked, you know, that in itself is no easy task, right?
Well, that's right. Even if they had permission, it would have, you know, not every random TSA agent's going to be able to get into deleted files on your phone.
So when I read this story, the one thing that popped in my mind is something that our friend Larry Sharp said last week on Free For All. The reason Mahmoud Khalil, in his opinion, is targeted is because he is such a good character. He's well-spoken. He's married to an American citizen. He's a green card holder, and he's very eloquent in the way he speaks. Let's go get him, because if we could get him kicked out, then we could kick out anybody. The rest will be easier. Do you think there's something similar at play with this Dr. Alawe, because here she is. She's a kidney doctor. She's saving American lives, all right? She's not saving Lebanese lives as if that – like to me and you, that's no distinction. But let's say that you're some gung-ho patriot. She's saving American lives, and you're kicking her out because
of the Murphy Association. I get it. It does sound like what an attorney would recommend that you do if you wanted to – take as big a bite of the legal authority apple as possible.
This is a Supreme Court type of case where you go because it applies to everybody beneath her, even like the shady
characters.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
So I get the logic. I have to admit, I remain skeptical that that's what's going on because it doesn't sound like the administration. For example, the deportation of the couple of hundred Venezuelans to El Salvador. That does not strike me as a case where everyone was really careful to select the right group of people.
Would pick them, right?
Yeah. You know, it sounds more political, right?
Right, right.
And so I'm skeptical. It sounds more to me like someone was overzealously interpreting the memo they had gotten the previous day, right?
Okay.
And I think that that's an important element of this, too, is that whatever the White House might say, by the time it gets to the hands of someone with operational latitude, it's gone through a lot of links in that chain, which, again, highlights the importance of being careful in terms of articulating what it is that we're going after and what it is that we're not. Now, one more issue. And this is both legal and political, but mostly political. We had all been sold. I think we're still being sold. And for people like you and me, this is really important. What it is that we're being sold that we can buy is some sense of priority, right? 11 million people are here in the United States illegally, something like this, right?
Right.
I don't know what the number, it's a large number. It's a significant number.
Yeah. 13 million, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, maybe it's not that big in a nation of 340 million people, but it's not just rounding error. It's a significant number of people. Okay.
Right.
Deporting a lot of those people is just beyond, you know, any serious proportion of that number is beyond the capability of the federal government. We can argue round or square whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is reality. And we were sold the idea that there would be some prioritization, that it would begin with illegal aliens who have committed a violent felony, right? Go to the top of the list. You know, you're a bad person. You've committed, some kind of assault. You're a murderer, kidnapper. You're a bad person. You're here illegally. Gone, right?
Right.
And then we're going to work our way down the list. So, you know, maybe what's next is you're here illegally and you committed some dopey misdemeanor. You know, maybe next on the list, you're here illegally. You haven't made any effort to get legal. You know, maybe the reason you're illegal is because you missed a date or something. You know, these are, you know, we're getting further down on the list of priority, right? And I think most of us would feel a whole lot better about this whole program if we had a sense that, you know, criminals first, bad criminals first, marginal criminals next, other illegal aliens, you know, after that, before we get to people who are here legally. Okay, let's talk about the people who are here legally on visas, right? Green card, whatever. For those people to get deported, first of all, I got to feel good about having deported everyone we could from the illegal side.
Right.
Now we're going after people who are here. Violent felons. Okay, you're on a green card. You committed a violent felony. Attorneys can argue that round or square, but as I have said before, it's hard to gin up a lot of sympathy for that person, right?
Right, right.
Okay, you're gone. Now we're into really the bottom of the barrel after that. In turn, you know, legally here, committed some dopey misdemeanor. You know, is it worth it to go through the process? You get where I'm going here. We would all feel right. Better if we knew that this sense of priority was in the minds of the administration.
Right.
And when you are deporting someone who's here legally, and you're not alleging, you know, she missed a court appointment and became illegal. She missed, you know, a hearing date.
Right.
She didn't get the right stamp on her visa. None of that. Perfectly legal, right? And we're throwing her out kidney doctor, to your point, kidney transplant, right? So it's not an illegitimate HB1. It's a real one, right? This is not some high-tech company just alleging they need another coder and don't feel like paying American wages. Right, this is someone that, you know, Brown University says it needs at the medical center there. Okay, this is legit. And we're deporting her because of images on her phone and she attended a bad funeral and her religious affiliate. And maybe she does like Hezbollah and Hamas. But she doesn't send them money. She's not, you know, helping them any material way. That's got to be pretty far down on the list.
She is literally the case study of even, and I'll say it if you won't, the bigots in this country that want to have standards for immigrants, right? That they have to be well-educated, that they have to contribute to our society. You hear those arguments all the time, right? From people, from like Joe Blow, who thinks he or she understands immigration policy, will say, well, you know, if they're contributing to the society and they're not leeches and they're paying taxes and they blah, blah, blah. Well, here's the case study of that. A surgeon who owes her education to America is saving American lives, is paying taxes here. Yada, like every tick mark you could want, even if you were the worst kind of xenophobe, she ticks all those boxes, and we're still justifying kicking her out, like you said, without much due process, without a full understanding of what's going on. And by the way, to your point, murky as to whether or not she even did the things that they're accusing her of doing, which, even if they were true, probably don't rise to the level of kick her out of the country, right? So that's why I'm a little – and, of course, they're bringing out the fact that the judge who stayed the – who issued the restraining order against CBP was an Obama appointee. So now that still now goes into the gin mill of – let's impeach these activist judges, right? Because we got a ruling we don't like. Let's get those activist judges out.
Yeah, I don't like the impeachment movement stuff. That's sort of like, you know, you got to call more strikes when I'm pitching or I'm going to see you in the parking lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, at that point, it just becomes so politicized, even though we all know judges are political. We all know they have their biases. Like it seems also a case of be careful what you want because you might actually get it. Like if you're Republicans right now, be careful what you ask for because these tactics always come. We'll end it on this, Mike. I am shocked at how much politicians think politics will end once they leave office. You know what I mean? Like,
right. It's amazing, isn't it?
Right. So Republicans think that what they're doing now, Democrats will never think of doing once they're out of office.
No, this will never come back to bite us.
And by the way, same thing with the Democrats, right? Their whole, like, you need a supermajority, let's get rid. Same thing. They thought the Republicans would never take over. So that, to me, is always, like, a laughing point for me. It's like
– oh, of course it is. Well, yeah. And you know, the budget resolution and the cloture vote, you know, the Democrats wanted to get rid of it. Now they love it. I mean, we could go on and on and on.
Right. All right, everyone. This has been an interesting Liberty Lens. I hope you enjoyed it. Catch us again next Thursday when we'll have another episode. Until then, for my friend and partner, Mr. Mike Termont, this has been Big John. See you next week.